All right, Mr. Nick, would you open us up in prayer, please? Yes, if you're Mr. Nick.
Lord, I thank you for us all being able to make it here tonight. And I thank you that people are faithful and that you work in this church. I pray that you would just prepare everybody's hearts and set aside distractions from everyone's mind. And that you would let there be joy and a right spirit of God in here tonight. In Jesus' name I pray, amen.
Amen.
All right, folks, we're in Job chapter 6. Job chapter 6. Eliphaz the Temanite has talked. And now Job is going to speak. It's not so much an answer. They're almost speaking. Come on in there, you good Cassiolas. This is a girl's sign. We don't have to put up those ugly fellas, huh?
Present company included?
Cassiolas.
Yeah.
Nice.
Right there.
All right. All right, Job chapter 6. But Job answered and said, "Oh, that my grief were throughly weighed, and my calamity laid in the balances together." Okay. Now, one of the things Job definitely looks for in this is pity. All right? And you are never, there's a few times when you're particularly ugly in life. One of them is when you're defensive. Thank you, Trevor. And another one is when you're looking for pity. Okay? And there'll be a couple times in your life when you may need pity. Okay? They're usually at terrible, awful things that happen. Some terrible death, some awful thing that's gone on. And let me tell you something, you don't want to stay there. Okay? You do not want to stay where people need to pity you. You need to get out of that as quick as you can, okay? Job is basking in it. And he's really, one of the things he's upset about is his friends aren't pitying him.
Pastor, isn't that kind of one of the defining things of, like, I remember Ed used to tell us all the time that he did, you know, in first gear. But that's kind of the point of that is you're going around in a circle and you're only getting sympathy and pity and
yeah, and you're gonna find there's people who milk pity, and you know that's just a thing. You know, be ready to pity people, but there's nothing more disgusting than someone's demanding pity. Okay, it's easier to pity somebody who's trying hard not to be pitied, trying to do their best, trying to, you know, do what they can. But he says this. He's talking about if his grief were truly weighed, my calamity laid in the balances together, for now it would be heavier than the sand of the sea. Therefore, my words are swallowed up. And again, what Job's just been through is pretty awful. Okay? I mean, every one of your kids dead. Everybody of your wealth gone. Those are not easy things. And yet, I have met people who've lived through that, such as in world wars, things of that sort. Again, I always go back to the guy in Greece. I was laughing. You know, when it says on a dollar bill, good for all debts, public and private, let me tell you something. When you go overseas, you see how valuable that is. They'll go to great lengths for American dollars. You can always get a better exchange rate on the street than you can at a bank. So, I mean, for example, if you were in Mexico and the peso, there's so many pesos per dollar. If you go on the street to a street vendor, he'll give you more than a bank will, okay? Because those American dollars are just worth a lot, okay? A lot of governments try to control that exchange rate or whatever. But what the guy told me, he just said, look, he said, two times in my life, I have woken up and every single dollar I had in the bank and every single dollar that I'd saved was worthless. He didn't mean dollar, but every bit of the money he had, the actual bills he had, they're just worthless. No one was ever going to take them again, okay? Imagine if all the money you had in the bank and everything you had and every dollar bill you had suddenly was just worthless. No one was ever going to take it again. And he knew what it was like to lose everything he had. And there's a lot of people who grew up with that kind of reality, the kind of thing that happened to them. Job has just had this happen to him, and it's an awful thing. Now it goes on, he says, verse 4, for the arrows of the Almighty are within me, the poison whereof drinketh up my spirit. The terrors of God do set themselves in array against me. You know, the devil's done it to him, done it with God's permission, but he's definitely seen as God against him. And then he says, verse 5, doth the wild ass bray when he hath grass? And the answer is no, okay? The wild ass brays when he's looking for food, okay? Then he goes on and says, or loweth the ox over his fodder? Okay, no. Okay, when he's got his fodder, he's eating, okay? Can that which is unsavory be eaten without salt? No, it's tough to eat certain things without salt. And then it says this, is there any taste in the white of an egg? No, it's a tasteless thing, okay? You have to cook it and put salt on it to get something out of it. The things that my soul refuses to touch are as my sorrowful meat. Okay? Oh, that I might have my request and that God would grant me the thing that I long for. Keep in mind, at no point have we ever seen him ask God for anything. This is the one thing, and his friends even told him, we'd make our request to God if we were you. Okay? And yet, he doesn't do that. He just stands there. He knows God's listening. And we're going to see Job speak in a couple different ways. There's times he's going to slip into prophetic speech. And there's other times he's just going to mourn his own situation. So he goes on and he says this, verse 9, even that it would please God to destroy me, that he would let loose his hand and cut me off. Really what he's looking for is death. He's suicidal. He's just wishing God would kill him. Okay? I don't know if you've ever been there where you just wish God would kill you, but... I think everybody's been to a point in their life when you just wish God would kill you. Just get it over with, okay? Then should I have comfort. Yea, I would harden myself in sorrow. Let him not spare, for I have not concealed the words of the Holy One. So here he's telling you, look, I have spoken for God. The things I knew of God, I've spoken out. I've said them. You know, why is God doing this to me? What is my strength that I should hope, and what is mine end that I should prolong my life? Now, this is interesting. Is my strength the strength of stones, or is my flesh of brass? Our iron, or our bodies are based on iron, okay? Iron in our blood and such. Angels are based on brass, okay? And their flesh is different. It's just one of those things you'll find as you go through there. And, but... He talks about my strength, the strength of stones. And that's kind of interesting itself. You make things of stones, but also keep in mind when he talks about Behemoth later, he'll talk about his stones, okay? And he's really talking about his testicles there when he says it, okay? And so he's saying, "Are my, you know, is my strength and my stones, all right? And am I just somebody full of testosterone? And, you know, running around, you know, Tarzan or whatever." All right. Verse 13, is not my help in me, and is my wisdom quite driven from me? To him that is afflicted, pity should be shown from his friend, but he forsaketh the fear of the Almighty. Okay. In other words, look, you should be pitying me right now. Instead, you've standing there giving me all this dumb advice. You've just forsaken the fear of God doing this. My brethren have dealt deceitfully as a brook, as the stream of brooks that pass away. Think of those of you ever walk through the woods in the springtime. There's all these little streams and brooks that run all over the place. They don't last long, okay? As the summer wears on, those brooks just pass away. I know that used to be one of my favorite things. My cousin and I used to go up on Irish Hill Road in Ellicottville, and just when the snow was melting, and we'd carve ourselves boats, and we'd follow them all day long, follow down through the little streams until they ran down and crossed 242. And we'd just spend all day doing that. But as the spring wore on, those brooks would just dry up. You couldn't find any more. They're gone, okay? So he's saying they've dealt deceitfully as a brook, and as the streams of brook, they pass away, which are blackish by reason of the ice wherein the snow is hid. What time they wax warm, they vanish. That's what my friends say. You know what we call that fair weather friends. Okay? They vanish. When it's hot, they're consumed out of their place. There is a friend that sticketh closer than a brother, Solomon said. Anybody can have friends when they're rich. Anybody can have friends when things are going wonderful for them and they're winning. There's not many people who will stick with you when you're losing. And once in a while, you'll have one or two friends like that. I was talking about how when Ruth Ann and I ran into our trouble, we lost almost every friend we had, but not every friend. There were a few that stuck with us. And even when it looked like we were just terrible people, they stuck with us, okay, and waited it out. And I've always thanked God for that.
Randy? Kind of adding on to that, years back ago, my mom once told me, it's better to have few and genuine friends than many and whatever friends.
Yeah, that's right. Few and genuine friends. And, you know, no matter how much a cat loves you, would you dare walk by it if you're the size of a mouse? I often think of that with some of my friends, you know. And I told one time, I told him, I said, you know, I am surprised. I said, I shrank to the size of a mouse and you stayed my friend. And I didn't think he would, and he did, and it was a good thing.
Just how many of your friends did you suspect of the cloak and dagger?
It's not that I suspected them of cloak and dagger, but they melted away as the brooks. They melted away as brackish ice. They melted away when things went wrong. They didn't want to be seen with us. Okay? So he said in verse 17, what time they wax warm, they vanish. When it is hot, they are consumed out of their place. The paths of their way are turned aside. They go to nothing and perish. And he says, the truth, the team will look. The companies of Shema waited for them. All right? Now here, this kind of a interesting prophetic statement here or whatever. I'm not sure as I even totally understand it. They were confounded because they had hope, and thither were they ashamed. So he's probably making allusion to something that they remembered, a time when, you know, these troops were there and nothing happened and thought things would happen for them, and they didn't. Verse 21, for now ye are nothing. Ye see my casting down and are afraid. Did I say bring unto me or give a reward for me of your substance? He said, look, did I ask you guys for anything? Did I say come here and give me something? Did I ask you guys for anything at all? Okay. Verse 23, or deliver me from the enemy's hand. In other words, did I ask that? Or redeem me from the hand of the mighty? Did I ask any of you to do that? Okay. Teach me, and I'll hold my tongue. Cause me to understand wherein I have erred.
I think he regrets that later.
Yeah. You know, it's kind of fascinating. You know, he's going, all right, fellas, come on, big boys, teach me. Show me what I've done wrong. Now, they all going to stand up and do their best, all right? And, you know, there's one point where Jesus Christ says, which one of you convinceth me of sin? Which one of you can do it? Which one of you can come up here and convince me that I've sinned, okay? And I would never dare stand up in the pulpit and say that, all right? Because I'd have long lines of people wait to take numbers, all right? And probably nobody be lying, all right? They'd all remember dumb things that I've done, all right? And or whatever. But Job kind of puts it out there. He's taunting them. And you know why? Because Job lived a pretty righteous life, okay? All right, so he goes on and he says, verse 24, teach me and I will hold my tongue. And cause me to understand where I have erred, how forcible are right words. But what if you're arguing reprove? Do you imagine to reprove words and speeches of one that is desperate and such as the wind? Is that what you think you're going to do? You're going to come up here, I'm just some desperate guy saying things, and you're going to straighten out what I said? Verse 27, yea, ye overwhelm the fatherless, and ye dig a pit for your friend. Now he's casting stuff at them. These are not men who've ever overwhelmed the fatherless and dug pits, all right, for people. But, again, one of the themes you'll hear me state a lot is you are never uglier than when you get defensive. Okay? When you get defensive and somebody's accused you or you think they are or they're stepping in your territory, you'll say the ugliest things you'll ever say. You'll say stuff you'll regret, okay? When you get defensive, and that's why the opposite defensiveness is meekness. The opposite of meekness is defensiveness. Okay? When God sees a woman that's meek, it is of great price to him. Okay? One that will not get defensive. And again, pity the man who causes a woman to want to be defensive. Pity that man. Nothing better she can do than be meek and get God on her side, okay? But it's that defensiveness. You think they're going to say something against me. I've had two men in this church come to me and say, well, I always attack people before they can attack me, okay? You know both of them, all right? And that's how they lived. And just miserable, awful lives. Terrible lives. All right. Verse 28. Now therefore be content, look upon me, for it is evident unto you if I lie. Well, they seem to think there's a lot of evidence, and you'll see that. Return, I pray you, let it not be iniquity. Yea, return again, my righteousness is in it. Okay. Now, this is where you're going to see where he starts getting very self-righteous. Keep this in mind. Self-righteousness isn't where you try to tell people what a good person you are. Oh, I gave this amount of money to the church, or oh, I, you know, build a house for the poor. That isn't how self-righteousness works. I mean, I've heard that once in a while, but for every 100 self-righteous statements I've ever heard, maybe only one is where they talk about the good thing they do. Most self-righteousness is where you talk about what you don't do. You know, my brother steals from my mother. I would never do that. Self-righteous, okay? You know, I've drunk and that kind of thing, but I've never come home and slapped my wife, you know? Well, I'm glad you don't, all right? What you're doing is you're comparing yourself to other people. That's self-righteousness. What'd the Pharisee do? He pointed over at the publican and said, look, I don't do what this man does. Okay, that's self-righteous. And let me tell you, I have never met a person so low down that they can't find someone who does something worse than they do. I have never yet met that person. And people bolster themselves in self-righteousness based on these other people, okay? And say, well, I don't do what they do, okay? That is self-righteousness. All right. Verse 30, is there iniquity in my tongue? Cannot my taste discern perverse things? Okay. So, he's saying, look, I know whether things are good or not be said. I know that before I say them, whether they're perverse. And let me tell you, I know people who can't. There was a time in my life when I could not control my tongue. I remember a friend of mine one time telling me, well, I never invite you to my house because I'm afraid you'll say some of these things in front of my wife, okay? And he wasn't even that good a guy, all right? But I remember being kind of ashamed because I would just say anything, anytime, anywhere, and, you know, just blurt it out. And, you know, if somebody said something, kind of twist it around, make a sexual reference out of it, and you know, those double entendres or whatever else. And, you know, and after a while, you know, you just don't have control of it. I mean, there's people, you can always tell a person has control because they'll do it at work but not at home, all right? They'll do it when the preacher's not around, but when he is, you know, is around, they won't do it. I was one of those guys, it wouldn't matter who was there, I said it, all right? And, you know, it just blew, came out. Am I proud of that? No, I'm ashamed of that when I think back on it, all right? It's a terrible thing. It was an awful thing that I was that way. All right, chapter 7. Is there not an appointed time to man upon earth? Are not his days also like the days of an hireling? In other words, a hireling works for so many days and that's it. As a servant earnestly desireth the shadow. What do you mean, earnestly desireth the shadow? Well, he's out there working. Was he looking for a shady place? He's looking to get out of the sun. Why? He's not working to get riches out of his field. He's only working for money. And if he can step aside somewhere and take a break in the shadow, he's going to do it. Oh, here comes the boss and I'll step out again. Bible calls that eye service. Don't ever be an eye service employee. What's that mean? Working hard when they're looking at you and not working hard when they're not looking at you. I always talk back, and you've heard me talk before about my over-the-hill gang, the old men that came to work for me when I ran a shop. And three or four different men came up. What would happen is they'd work for so long, they'd retire, go home, and they'd drive their wife nuts, all right? And they're guys who like working. And so they'd come to me and say, hey, you know, can I come in a couple days a week and work? You know what? They're the best workers in the world. Just the best in the world. And I'd go back there sometimes, and they'd all be sitting around the stove drinking coffee. You know what? it was time to sit around the stove and drink coffee. They didn't blanch. They didn't look at me. They just knew it was time to do it. I'd come back another time. It's lunchtime, and they're all working their tails off at lunchtime. You know why? Because they knew that work had to get done. They didn't care if it was lunchtime. They're going to get that work done. And, you know, and that's, they're not working for iServer. They're not just, can't see it from my house type of thing. And, you know, or that's enough for government work, or, you know, all the things that get said. And, you know, it's one of those things, do your best, work your hardest, be that kind of a person. What if nobody rewards you? Well, God sees what you're doing, okay? And otherwise, you're going to get in that habit. And you know, there's nothing more frustrating than being the guy who always is doing that extra work, and the one time the boss comes is the one time you're sitting down or whatever. But, you know, in the long run, that's not going to happen. In the long run, they slowly figure out who's doing what, okay? No matter who's lying against you, yes, sir.
You know, over the Cuba special days there, there was a small group of people, maybe 9 or 10, and everybody knew pretty much what they did. The boss wouldn't come out and say anything. But every once in a while, you'd get someone new in there that would just start grumbling about something.
Yeah. It
takes one person to mess up the whole thing.
But yeah, that's right.
They'd run them right out as soon as they could. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, that's one of the things, to be honest with you, I really respected about the factories and such in this area. Because there's so few of them and jobs are so hard, is people are usually pretty jealous for their jobs and they don't put up with the slackers. You know, usually they kind of self-police. They know who the slackers are and, you know, they're frustrated with them or whatever else.
Oh,
and
my gosh, that happens at my job.
Well, yeah.
I got a few slackers.
Yeah. But they get bad reputations.
Pretty quickly.
Yep. All right. So verse 2, as a servant earnestly desireth the shadow, as an hireling looketh for the reward of his work. What's he doing? He's, you know, the only reason he's working is he's looking for a paycheck. Jesus Christ talks about the shepherd that's just a hireling. Okay? Doesn't really care for the sheep. The only reason he's taking care of the sheep is I'm getting money. A lot of pastors, that's all they are. Okay? They're just looking to, you know, get a paycheck or whatever else, and they're called hirelings. Whereas there's, you know, Randy has a saying, and he heard it somewhere, and he's right when he says it, that if you enjoy what you do, you'll never work a day in your life.
Sure.
All right? You're enjoying what you do, and there's nothing like that. And that's really what you ought to strive for. If where you're working you don't enjoy it, you either need to pray to God, make me enjoy this, okay? Or find something you enjoy, okay? And do it, because you'll put your whole heart into it. You won't just do it as a hireling. You'll actually see to it that it's done. And it won't bother you if, you know, you end up stepping back in after you punched out and take care of one other little thing. Why? You want it right. You want to leave it right. You want to make sure it's right. And you have a jealousy to see to it it's right. And then you have people that, you know, well, ain't my job, you know, walk away from it or whatever else. And you know, stay away from that attitude.
Indeed.
Yeah. Don't let people spoil you with that. It's like they were saying, you know, one guy will drag the whole thing down, okay?
And what don't did they you... say with the apple in the barrel?
Yeah. All right. So he says in verse 3, so I am made to possess months of vanity, okay? And wearisome nights are appointed to me. There's nothing worse than when you're in the midst of a horrible thing and time will not pass, okay?
Yeah.
Time will not pass, and that's what he's saying is going on here. When I lie down, I say, when shall I arise? And the night be gone, and I am full of tossings to and fro into the dawning of the day. What a miserable life.
Yeah.
My flesh is clothed with worms and clods of dust. My skin is broken and become loathsome, okay? And they didn't have acne medicine back then, right? But again, he's describing the situation he's in. You imagine what that's like with those boils all over your body and you're trying to lay down, you can't even go to sleep. And, you know, you're just wondering when the day comes. The day comes and it's no better during the day. And it is an awful thing he's in here. He said, verse 6, my days are swifter than a weaver's shuttle and spent without hope. In other words, I go through the day and nothing gets taken care of, okay? Just you think, boy, this will be the day, and by the, you know, the night comes and nothing got taken care of, nothing's done here. I don't know if you ever noticed, but time moves at different speeds for different people, okay? If you don't believe that, tell a kid that there's, oh, by the way, as of today, there's 100 days till Christmas. All right, does that sound pretty good? All right, but you know what? To some of you people, that was kind of, oh my goodness. To Caleb, you might as well have told him 28 years. All right, you know, because 100 days is just forever, all right? To Taryn, that's a long time, isn't it? Oh, you think it's a short time? Okay, well, hold your breath during that. All right, but again, you know, you think back when you were a kid, a summer day lasted forever, didn't it? Just lasted forever. Now summer days don't last that long.
Kind of something just for kicks and giggles to go along with that. A while back, saw a test sheet. So answer question was, on your last day of life, where would you be? It said, here in school, because it feels like an eternity.
Well, there you go. All right. He says this. Verse 7. Oh, remember that my life is wind. Mine eyes shall no more see good. Okay? The yeah?
It says, oh, remember that my life is wind. What does it mean by that?
Nothing to it. It's just wind. It's just blowing away. Try to catch the wind in a bottle. You try to catch your life in a bottle. You can't do it. Okay? If I could take time in a bottle, Jim Croce. All right, just dying to get you to hear that stuff. All right. All right.
Noted.
He says in verse 8, the eye of him that hath seen me shall see me no more. Thine eyes are upon me, and I am not. He says, one of these days I'm going to pass away and be gone. As a cloud is consumed and vanishes away, so he that goeth down to the grave shall come up no more. Okay. He shall return no more to his house, neither shall his place know him anymore. Now, one of the things you have to keep in mind, later on, Job's going to tell you he's going to resurrect. He's going to tell you, okay? And yet here he's saying, I'm going to go to the grave and you'll know me no more. One time he's talking eternally with God. The other time he's talking about just in the lifetime of my friends, okay? In other words, I could say, hey, I'm going to pass on. You folks won't see me anymore. Okay, I'm not saying I don't believe in a resurrection. Okay, I'm just saying I'm going to go sass my wife, all right? And that'll be it. She'll shoot me or whatever. But, all right. So he goes on and he says this. Verse 10, he shall return no more to his house, neither shall his place know him any more. Therefore I will not refrain my mouth. I will speak in the anguish of my spirit. I will complain in the bitterness of my soul. We have people here, that's your life verse. All right, I have a complaining spirit, and I'm going to be bitter, and I'm going to let it, you know it, everywhere I go. All right, verse 12, am I a sea or a whale that thou settest a watch over me? In other words, they've come to look at him now, so it's kind of sarcastic what he's saying. All right, they all come, they sat there and watched him for 7 days, and now he's defensive and he's saying stuff. Okay. When I say my bed shall comfort me, my couch shall ease my complaint, then thou scarest me with dreams. Here he's talking to God, and terrifies me with visions. Here's a complaint he's making to God. So that my soul chooses strangling and death rather than my life. I loathe it. I would not live always. Let me alone, for my days are vanity. Now it's interesting. He's talking to God here, but not for relief and bitterness, okay? It's amazing to me how many people are bitter with God, okay? It's amazing to me. Remember that time we were talking, Tanya, and you were at the house and she was talking and and finally it came out and I said, you are bitter with God. She said, yeah, I am. and people won't say it. If I walked up, are you bitter with God? Oh, no, I'm not bitter with God. But, you know, you keep pushing. You'd be amazed how many people are bitter with God, okay? And bottom line, they see God as the why didn't he do this? Why didn't he do that? Why didn't he take care of this? Why didn't he take care of that? Okay?
Is this always the case?
Much of the time. Okay? Much of the time. Okay. Randy, I'm always amazed at times when your bitterness comes out. People trying to take pictures of you and suddenly sometime you were mad as a kid, it comes out. You'd be surprised. I think even you'd be surprised how much bitterness you still harbor, okay? And it's killing you, all right? And the more you get rid of it, the better you'll be. And I'm just picking on Randy because he asked. I think there's a lot of people I could point at you in the face and say that same thing, how much bitterness you hold on to, okay? And don't let it go. All right. Verse 16, I loathe it. I would not live always. Let me alone, for my days are vanity. What is man that thou should magnify him? Okay. And that thou shouldest set thine heart upon him. And that thou shouldest visit him every morning and try him every moment. In other words, what are you doing this for? You know, I used to watch guys fight on the school bus. You know, they'd be mouthing each other for 2 or 3 days, and I'll get you, oh, yeah, and each one's telling their friends. And finally the day comes, they both, you know, slug each other or whatever else, and finally one, will, you know, gets knocked down, and, well, just take my blood, too. What do you want to do? Kill me or something? You know, and they, you know, they they cry like that, you know, and you just, you know, what they're saying is you defeated me, but they're bitter or whatever else. And Job's basically doing this to God, okay? All right. Verse 19. How long wilt thou not depart from me, nor let me alone till I swallow down my spittle? I have sinned. What shall I do unto thee, O thou preserver of men? Now, this is really like people who come up to the altar and just can't get saved, okay? I'm reading a sermon by a guy who did a sermon back in the 1930s, and he talked about Peter drowning and the funeral for Peter when he walked out on the water. And, you know, and just how terrible it is, you know, that he walked out there, and what a fool to trust in Jesus Christ and think that he could walk on water. And he said, you know, there was always someone to yell, but he didn't drown. He said, that's exactly right, he didn't drown. And he said, because his faith couldn't do anything about it. But it's who he trusted. That's the one that could do something. There is something in Jesus Christ. And even though Peter failed, he knew that man wouldn't fail, okay? And, you know, it's just a good thing. He's talking about the idea, you know, if you have a check from somebody, no matter how much you believe in that person, has nothing to do with it. It's whether or not that person has money in the account, all right? You know, you believe in me with all your heart, but if I write you a $1,000 check, I can tell you right now, it ain't gonna clear, all right? So, the point is, it isn't whether or not you trust in that person, it's whether or not that person can make that check good. Jesus Christ can make good what he promises, okay? All right. Verse 20 again, I have sinned, and what shall I do unto thee, O thou preserver of men? Why hast thou set me as a mark against thee, so that I am a burden to myself? Why'd you do this? And why dost thou not pardon my transgression? All right? And take away my iniquity. How come you haven't done it? How come you haven't pardoned my transgression? How come you haven't taken away my iniquity? Okay? For now I sleep in the dust, and thou shalt seek me in the morning, but I shall not be. Well, old Bildad the Shuhite is going to speak. Then answered Bildad the Shuhite and said, how long wilt thou speak these things, and how long shall the words of thy mouth be like a strong wind? Okay? When all this is over again, Elihu's going to be upset because these men never did find a way to shut Job up. Okay? They never did find the right words. Verse 3, doth God pervert judgment? No, of course he doesn't. Or doth the Almighty pervert justice? If thy children have sinned against him, and he hath cast them away for their transgression, if thou would seek unto God betimes and make thy supplication Almighty, if thou were pure and upright, surely now he would awake for thee and make the habitation of thy righteousness prosperous. So he said, look, if you're as righteous as you said you would, God would just take care of it all right? He'd come in, no, that's not necessarily true, okay? You know, in other words, just because the person, it said right in the beginning, Job was an upright man, okay? And yet all these things happened to him. You know, there is a theme in the world that when things go wrong, it's because secretly you're an evil person, okay? And there are people who are delighted when things go wrong with you. Everybody has someone like that in your life. If something goes wrong with you, they'll secretly be delighted something went wrong with you, okay? And then you have others who will sorrow, okay? Don't have anyone in your life who who you are delighted when something goes wrong with them. Don't have anyone in your life that way. The psalmist said this, when they were sick, I mourned, okay? He's talking about those who mocked him. David talks about those who were delighted at his fall. He says, but when they were hurting, okay, I didn't treat it that way. And there are some people, it's hard not to, you know, kind of clap when everything's falling apart, but don't do that. Mourn for them, okay? Sorrow for them.
Pastor, how do you not see sometimes the irony of, I mean, there's a difference between seeing the irony, I think, and enjoying it.
And you know what, Tanya, you said it well. Tanya just said, there's an in between seeing the irony. You know, some guy that's run his mouth, and then, bam, it happens to him, okay? Okay, you see the irony. You know what? Everybody else does, too, and they do. Be their friend, okay? Don't throw up their teeth. Just be quiet, okay? Sorrow that it happened to them. Because if you see the irony, believe me, they see the irony, too, okay? I've been there a few times, all right? Where suddenly, ooh, you know, Mr. Johnny ran your mouth all over the place. Now look what's happened to you, okay? And, you know, and there are people who love to throw it in your teeth, and there's others who sorrow for you when that happens, okay? And it's not that I was blind. I could well see. Oh, my goodness, it happened to me, okay? And, you know, there's a lesson in that. And be on that person's side. Do your best for that. You know, there's the old bureaucrat statement, be kind to everyone you meet on the way up in life. Because they're the same ones you meet on the way back down, okay? And, you know, as you're climbing up in a job and getting a little more responsibility or things are happening to you or whatever else, be kind to the lowest people you can. Be kind to every one of them, because when you get kicked down the ladder, if you've been haughty, they'll rejoice in your fall, okay? That's why I've always told my kids, if you go to the gas station, somebody pumps your gas, give them at least a dollar bill. Treat the waitresses. You know, if you can't tip 20% round up, don't go out, okay? Why? Because they're waiting. You know, when Cliff Taylor is around, Ruth Ann and I will always spend at least one time where we go out to breakfast with them. And we'll sit there at that table, and sometimes we'll dominate that table for 45 minutes to an hour and a half. And I never leave less than $20 in the tip, because that waitress, you know, they're usually coming by, you know, taking your coffee and everything else. And I never leave less than that. Why? They're waiting on a couple men of God, okay? I want them to understand that, you know, hey, you're a servant of God here. You know, you're helping us in this thing. And I want them to understand and reward them accordingly in that. And you know what? If anything ever happened to us, they'd mourn. They'd sorrow if something happened to us. And, you know, just treating everyone, find out, you know, talk, let people talk to you. Let them tell their story. Let them, you know, let them explain stuff to you. That's one of the kindest things you can ever do is listen to somebody. One of the statements I have in my own heart is I'll say a lot of times, every man will be heard. What I mean by that is everybody wants to be heard. That's his will. And again, I've dealt with absolute gutter bums on three different continents. And I've never met one yet who, if you wouldn't listen to him, would tell you his philosophy. And I mean, sometimes these are guys crusted in their own vomit. These are guys who can't rub 2 cents together. And yet they really believe they have something inside so important if anyone would ever listen to them. And you know the kindest thing you ever, listen to them. Just listen to them.
Just for some personal advice from me, how would you do that when you're going back in mind, when you're listening to someone? Oh my gosh, that sounds so stupid and retarded. How can I go another minute?
Long-suffering, okay? The Apostle Paul accused the Corinthians of suffering fools gladly, okay? You may have to suffer fools, but you don't have to do it gladly, all right? You don't have to be happy when you do it. And there comes a point when you have to shut people off. There comes a point when they push it too far, okay? And you've listened to about as much as you want to listen to, okay? And, you know, and you can tell them, you know, that's enough now. And, you know, but be long-suffering in that. Try to make it as long as you can before you have to do that, okay? It's to your honor that they want to speak to you. And if you're the only one in the world they can ever speak to, it's doubly your honor, okay? That they'll listen to you, or that you'll listen to them, I mean.
There are times that I've just been standing there at the cash register, cashing people out, and just like, you know, just saying, you know, hello and all, I mean, willing to listen. These people, they just start pouring.
They'll pour it out. Yeah. Yeah, if you're working a cash register, you'd be amazed at the things people will tell you, okay?
Yes.
And you'd get a degree in psychiatry running a cash register. All right.
All the good stuff about everybody in town.
Yes. All right, verse 7. Though thy beginning was small, yet thy latter end shall greatly increase, okay? For inquire, I pray thee, of the former age, and prepare thyself to the search of their fathers. And he says, for we are but of yesterday and know nothing, because our days are an earth are a shadow. Okay? So what he's telling them is, hey, look, you know, look back to the old people. Look how things used to be. And then he's saying, you know, because we're just here for a brief time. And I've pointed that out before, those people whose names are on the windows.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? I don't think they could have imagined the time when there'd be a group of people in here who would have no idea who they are. None whatsoever. You know? The people who built this, I don't think they ever had an idea that people would be sitting there and have no idea whatsoever who they were, okay? Because they all know each other. They're all a tight little group and everything else, and yet they're gone, all right? And the day will come when people will occupy this building who have no idea who we are whatsoever. Yes, sir?
West Falls and McElhaney's.
Well, there you go, West Falls and McElhaney's, all right?
Yep.
Maybe people tried to forget them. Yeah. All right. So he goes on and he says in verse 10, shall not they teach thee and tell thee and utter words out of their heart? Can the rush go up without mire? You know, that's a weed that grows in the swamp, okay? Can the flag grow without water? Again, it's a plant. It's a water plant. Whilst it is yet in its greenness and not cut down, it withereth before any other herb. You think of some of those water plants that come up in the spring or whatever else, but they're the first ones to go, all right? Because that water begins to dry up and, you know, they're pretty for a little while and then they're gone. Whilst it is yet in its greenness and not cut down, it withereth before any other herb. So are the paths of all that forget God, okay? And the hypocrite's hope shall perish. Whose hope shall be cut off and whose trust shall be as a spider's web. So again, that's a true statement. But who are you putting it on? You're putting it on Job, all right? Does he know that's why Job's in that condition? No. He's just making an assumption, okay? Well, Job, you're in this condition. And again, you know, Nick comes to me and says, well, I'm not feeling good today. Yeah, you know, somebody fills their self with all those drugs and all that stuff. What am I doing? I'm accusing him of being sick because he filled his body full of drugs. But yet I was true. Somebody who fills their body with drugs is going to feel sick, okay? But when I say it to him, I'm making an accusation. But it's a true statement, okay? But it's a lie applied to him, okay? So the thing is what they're doing with Job here. They're making true statements, but it's hard, all right, when they say it against him, okay? Verse 15, he shall lean upon his house, but it shall not stand. He shall hold it fast, but it shall not endure. He is green before the sun, and his branch shooteth forth in his garden. His roots are wrapped about the heap, and seeth the place of stones. If he destroy him from his place, then it shall deny him, saying, I have not seen thee. Behold, this is the joy of his way, and out of the earth shall others grow. Behold, God will not cast away a perfect man, neither will he help the evildoers. Okay? And again, it's a true statement. God doesn't just cast away a perfect man, all right?
There's no perfect man.
Verse 21, till he fill thy mouth with laughing and thy lips with rejoicing. He's saying, hey, you know, if you were really what you say are, then God would take care of it. God would come in here. They that hate thee shall be clothed with shame, and the dwelling place of the wicked shall come to naught. Okay? So, everything he said is true in the sense of how God works. But what he's doing is misjudging and putting it upon his friend and saying, hey, this is how it goes. Okay? You know, your friend says, hey, I lost my job. Yeah, you know, people that steal from their employers can't keep their job. What's that all about, all right? You know, and there's other reasons you lose your job, all right? And, you know, but it's a true statement. people that steal from their employers can't keep their jobs, okay? So it's one of those things, being careful what you say, how you say it. All right, I don't think we'll get through 9, but we'll go a little bit more with it. Then Job answered and said, I know it is so of a truth, but how should man be just with God? Okay? So he's acknowledging it. You know, hey, I know you're right, Bildad. All right. But how's a man going to be just with God? Tell me how he could do it. All right. If he will contend with him, he cannot answer him one of a thousand. In other words, if you're playing Jeopardy with God, he's going to win. All right. Not one of a thousand, if God goes back and forth, that you're gonna win that battle with God, okay?
Yet many try.
That's exactly why. Verse 4. He is wise in heart and mighty in strength. Who hath hardened himself against him and hath prospered? Job's right. Nobody's hardened himself against God and prospered. Which removeth the mountains, and they know not, which overturneth them in his anger. Now here, Job is speaking about creation. Okay. When did God overturn mountains? Okay. In between Genesis 1 and Ezekiel 28. Okay. When he overturned the earth, he overturned the mountains, he did all of that. Okay. That's why you see the earth in Genesis 1:1, it's without form and void. Okay. It's just a blob underwater, and the Spirit of God moved upon the face of the waters. Okay. So Job's actually giving you, it's why Job's often called the science book of the Bible. Okay. Verse 6, which shaketh the earth out of her place, and the pillars thereof tremble. Where did God make the earth? For he hath founded it upon the seas and established it upon the floods. Is the earth on the seas today? Mm-mm. No. Okay. But there was a time when it was, and he shook it out of that place. Okay. It's not there anymore. To them, that's just a scientific fact. Okay. To us, it's like, well, God, I see it in the Bible, but it's too strange for me. Okay. All right. Which commandeth the sun, verse 7, which, and it riseth not and sealeth up the stars. Okay? And that's why it all has to come out again in the book of Genesis, Genesis 1. Okay? Which alone spreadeth out the heavens and treadeth upon the waves of the sea, which maketh Arcturus, Orion, and Pleiades in the chambers of the south. Now, it's interesting there because the chambers of the south are something that they're constellations that can only be seen from the southern hemisphere, okay, and cannot be seen from Palestine, and yet Job mentions them, all right?
Wow.
So that, yeah. Verse 10, which doeth great things, past finding out, yea, and wondrous without number. Lo, he goeth by me, and I see him not. He passeth on, but I perceive him not. We know why, because God wrappeth the garment, the light about him as a garment. We dealt with that on a Sunday at 1 o'clock. How do you make yourself invisible? Make the light instead of bouncing off you to go around you. Okay? So if I was looking at Nick and there was an angel standing in the way and he could make the light go around him, I wouldn't see that the light went around him. If I took a telephone, okay, cord and put it between me and Tony and talk, that's fine. But if I wrapped it around the building 4 times and talk, you wouldn't know. It's just, you know, it's just like the light. What if the light went around an angel in this room? We'd never know, would we? Okay? And that's what he's talking about. And it actually says that's how God makes himself invisible. And that's why some of you have been around where there's demonic things going on, and one of the first things that happens, the heat waves and little shimmerings and things like that, that go on when things get demonic, all right? All right, because there's things in that room, all right, that they're moving around in that room. All right. So he goes on and he says, verse 12, behold, he taketh away, who can hinder him? Who will say unto him, what doest thou? Well, everybody does, but nobody gets away with it. If God will not withdraw his anger, the proud helpers do stoop under him, how much less shall I answer him and choose out my words to reason with him? You know, and this is again where Job in his bitterness keeps saying, oh, if I could talk to God, but it wouldn't do any good if I talked to him. And Job really keeps convincing why it would. But if I could talk to him, I'd say this, but it wouldn't do any good. All right. And you'd be amazed at the people I talk to, and that basically always boils down to that. Well, it wouldn't do any good. He wouldn't listen to me anyway.
That's that false pride, though.
Well, it is. There's a false pride in that. I'm too evil. God won't save me, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Verse 14, how much less shall I answer him and choose out my words to reason with him? Whom though I were yet righteous, yet would I not answer him, but I would make supplication to my judge. And this is where Elihu says, you actually said, what would it profit me to be righteous? Okay. He's saying, well, if I was righteous, I still wouldn't answer him. Okay. In other words, no profit to that. No profit to being righteous. And you want to know something? That's why the Apostle Paul tells you, see that you're a prophet and appear unto all men. Because let's face it, you have friends who never want to come to church, never want to do anything like that, because they don't see one bit of profit in being righteous. They don't see one bit of profit in what's happened to your life. They don't see one bit of profit in wanting to be somebody in the house of God and hearing the things of God or whatever else. And Job's basically saying, hey, if I was righteous, wouldn't profit me. Try and do me a bit of good, okay? Goes on and he says, verse 16, if I had called and he had answered me, yet would I not believe that he had hearkened unto my voice. How's that calling out to God in faith, all right? For he breaketh me with a tempest and multiplieth my wounds without cause. You know, Proverbs says this, the curse causeless will not come. Okay? There's always a cause. That's an accusation against God. Mm-hmm. Verse 19, he will not suffer me to take my breath, but filleth me with bitterness. If I speak of strength, lo, he is strong. And of judgment, who shall set me a time to plead? If I justify myself, mine own mouth shall condemn me. He's in a pickle, and he knows he's in a pickle. He can't figure out why God's done this. He can't figure out why he's in the thing he's in. If I try to justify myself, my mouth will condemn me. And it will. Your words will come back, all right? Every idle word you've ever said, God will bring back against you. But it doesn't stop people from speaking them. Yes, sir.
How does the curse causeless shall not come? And then, how does that mesh with, Job being a righteous man?
Because there was a cause for it. There was a cause that these things came upon his life. A, God turned him over to Satan for the destruction of the flesh, that he might learn not to blaspheme, okay? A, to hide pride from him, and these are the reasons that it happened. Okay, we have a New Testament understanding of it, and we have what Elihu says. Bottom line, it all comes down to this. God was going to hide pride from Job. He didn't realize he had pride, but it was all said and done. He says, I lay my hand upon my mouth. I've spoken things too high for me, okay? Stephen?
Another thing, Jesus Christ was righteous and a curse came upon him.
Yeah, right. And again, and but not cause us.
I know, but he was perfect.
No, and that's true. Though he did no evil, and that yet these things happened to him. But again, even there, the cause was God's determination. But again, that's good. That is good, Stephen. That's really why in Psalm 18, one of the three reasons that God resurrects Jesus Christ out of hell is he says, because of the cleanness of my hands. It's one of the three reasons.
I guess that was my question in that. It was is the cause always, Job, you said to hide pride from him, is the cause always specifically dealt with that person?
I don't know. I'm not sure. I know this, that if something blows up in your life, usually the first reason you think of for why is it. Okay? The first reason that comes into your head, that's it. Okay? And I've had times where I've tried to, no, that was it. It came into your head, you knew instantly why it happened, okay? And, and you'll come up with great lame things afterwards, but that's why God did it, okay?
But in Job's case here, God knew he had pride, and he knew he had the self-righteousness, but Job hadn't displayed it yet.
No, it took this to bring it out. Okay? And you know what? What Jesus Christ teaches to pray, lead me not into temptation. Okay? God knows right now what could happen to your life for you to fall apart. Okay? God knows what it would take. There's whores on the street, broken, bodies full of scabs, working for the smallest amount of money in the world, who at one time in their life never dreamed that 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 could ever happen to them. Never dreamed that such a thing could happen, okay? And yet it did, okay? And I've had people tell me, sometimes I just wonder, how did all this ever happen? How did it ever come that I'm here, okay? And, you know, so don't ever say, oh, this could never happen to me, or never could, you know, don't ever say that, okay? You'd be amazed at what could happen to you if the circumstances were right. Goes on, he says this. Verse 20, if I justify myself, mine own mouth shall condemn me. If I say I'm perfect, it shall also prove me perverse. Though I were perfect, yet I would not know my soul. I would despise my life. Okay? All right? And again, this is where Elihu says, look, you didn't see any value in being righteous. He said, it's no, you know, you don't see any value in it. This is one thing, therefore, I said, he destroyeth the perfect and the wicked. If the scourge slay suddenly, he will laugh at the trial of the innocent. Okay? I don't think God laughs at the trial of the innocent. Okay?
Well, I mean, that's not something he would like or allow from his kids. So it would be reasonable to understand why he wouldn't do it himself.
Yeah. You know, it says God does laugh when the wicked get it. He that sitteth in the heavens shall laugh. The Lord shall have them in derision. Okay? Yes, sir.
At the end, Elihu says that, or maybe it was God that says it, but he says that Job said what was right about God, and his friend said what was wrong. Where's the difference?
In the repentance. When Job finally sees God, he speaks what's right. His friends don't. Okay? You don't see them coming out and spilling all over themselves to say, hey, we've been fools too in this thing. Job does, okay? I sought for what Job said right beforehand, and you won't find it. It's really what he says after God shows up and he despises his own self, okay? That's when he begins to speak right. All right. So then he says this. Verse 24, the earth is given into the hand of the wicked. He covereth the faces of the judges thereof. If not, where and who is he? Okay. And again, there are times when the wicked are given parts of the earth and that kind of thing. Now my days are swifter than a post. They flee away. They see no good. By a post, you know, we have a postman. That's what he's talking about. A post is the person who takes messages for a king. All right. So he's saying, you know, someone says we number in a post. There they're talking about a fence post. Here he's not talking about, you know, a post in that sense. He's talking about the one who takes messages. All right. They're passed away as the swift ships, as the eagle that hasteth to the prey. If I say I will forget my complaint, I will leave off heaviness and comfort myself. I am afraid of all my sorrows. I know thou wilt not hold me innocent. If I be wicked, why then labor I in vain? If I wash myself with snow water and make my hands never so clean, yet shalt thou plunge me in the ditch, and mine own clothes shall abhor me. For he is not a man, as I am, that I should answer him, and we should come together in judgment. Neither is there any daysman betwixt us. Okay, daysman is a person who, like a lawyer, somebody who'd advocate for you, okay, that might lay his hand upon us both. Let us take his rod away from me. Let him take his rod away from me, and let not his fear terrify me. Then would I speak and not fear him, but it is not so with me. So, Joe, a lot of bitterness comes out of him here, okay? And he definitely speaks things. You know, when God finally answers him, it's not pretty what God has to say to him. All right? And again, he's right in this one sense. If you contend with him, you're not going to answer him one out of a thousand, okay? So you're not going to win with God. You can argue with him and everything else, but you're not going to win with him. And, you know, one of the things I've learned in prayer is I've learned to tell him when I'm lying. Oh, God, I want this or that. You know I'm lying. I don't really want that, but I know it's the right thing, so I'm praying for it. But you know I'm lying because I don't really want it, but it's the right thing, so please do it, you know. And I just get along better with God when I talk to him that way, all right? It just goes better. All right, John Vadis, will you close us in prayer?
Our Heavenly Father, once again, we thank you for the opportunity to be here tonight, Father. We thank you for what we've heard tonight, and we thank you, the pastor's willing to teach us from your word, Father. And We just pray that we can take this home with us and study it, Father. And now we just ask for your blessing and the time of fellowship and the safe travel home. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen.
You know, so my point is, I found it just...